Welcome to the Painting of the Week podcast, where we look at some of the most significant paintings throughout history. Introducing your hosts, Phil Grabsky and Laura Bentham.
Hello again, it's Painting of the Week. And today we are looking at Mary Cassatt's In the Loge, which is from 1878. So just as a reminder, if you go to the 7th-art.com website, you can find the picture there, or you can Google it, of course. And it's, well, it's a really interesting painting. Laura, wouldn't you say so?
I would say so. And of course, this is really interesting, this painting. Because when you just look at it first, you just look at it and think, oh, it's just a lady looking at the stage and everything else. But then you look into it a bit deeper and you find out that she's actually looking more, she's kind of looking at the audience, I believe.
Mm.
And then when you go even further to that and you look over into the distance of the painting, there's a man leaning out looking at her.
Yeah.
So this all gets great.
She's kind of creepy, actually. I find that guy, because he's obviously with his wife.
He's already, yeah.
Or somebody.
Well, we don't know. It's Paris. I mean.
But there he is.
Paris, 1878. What do we say?
He's taken someone to the opera.
Mm.
And I must go off on a tangent straight away.
Great. Oh, good.
I got taken once to the Paris, to the Barcelona opera. I'm not even quite sure how you pronounce it. L-I-C-E-U. Catalan, Liceo, maybe. And this was a very wealthy Catalan family, and they had a box right on the edge of, right where the stage curtain came down. So you were both, part of the box was in front of the curtain when it came down, and part was behind.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But within the box, within the box, there was another curtain behind the seats.
Yeah.
And behind that curtain was a bed. Like a single bed and a little area for putting all the canapés and the champagne and the... And he just thought, what did these people get up to?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a real night out.
So if you're not enjoying it, you can maybe go off and have a little sleep.
Have a little lie down.
Okay.
Anyway.
Mm.
So, Mary Cassatt. Now, Mary Cassatt is... an impressionist.
Yes.
And we're currently making a film about Mary Cassatt, and we're working with an American art historian who's very clear that she should be thought of as a French impressionist rather than an American artist.
Yes.
But she is American. But she was part of this whole impressionist movement. So she is mixing with the likes of Monet and Renoir and Manet and... you know, all of them.
All the team, the Impressionist team.
Now, she's not one of the... She's clearly not one of the more well-known Impressionists. I mean, that would be a Monet, Manet, Renoir, mm-hmm. Degas, Cézanne. But she's right in there, and she's absolutely fascinating. This American comes over to Paris... She's both a painter and an increasingly important art dealer. So she becomes a conduit for a lot of Americans coming over, looking to buy art. And she says, oh, I think you want to buy this from Degas or this from Renoir. Anyway, we'll talk a bit more about her in a second. The thing that always strikes me about this particular painting, I remember the very first time I saw it, you just thought to yourself, how could she possibly have had an easel in the box, you know? And we assume that the guy is looking... So my thought was, your first thought is that guy is looking at her and she's looking at somebody else, because actually she's not looking down at the stage, is she? She's looking either across at the same level of boxes or even, if you look carefully, even maybe one level up.
Yes.
So they're all looking at each other. And again, you know... Impressionists, and maybe all painters, it's all about looking and the gaze, and in this case, the female gaze and the male gaze. But anyway, and then I suddenly thought, if she was actually in the box with her easel, then he's probably looking at her and thinking, what on earth is that woman doing in the Paris Opera?
With an easel.
But of course, I imagine, and I haven't done a little bit of research, I think the whole thing is clearly set up. She's recreated the opera setting, and I could be wrong, but I think that's her sister who just sat and modelled for her.
Oh, okay. But I did actually look at a little thing that said, with the opera house, there was actually more social area than sort of, or maybe it's balanced, than the actual the stage and the audience part. Mm. So when they came out for, I'm assuming there's an interval, maybe it was quite long, that they all then sat around and, well, stood around drinking and looking and seeing who was there, what they're wearing. That was actually more important, or as important as
I think that's true now of opera, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you go to Glyndebourne, it's as much about, I mean, it is beautiful music and beautiful singing, but it's also such a great place to, I mean, they have long breaks, don't they?
That's true. So they are doing the same. We're all checking out what you're wearing. Yeah.
Well, it's funny you should say, Glyndebourne, famously at Glyndebourne, I always assumed, and I think it's fairly true, you're supposed to wear black as a man and dress up as a woman. And I thought that felt, I got invited there. I'd done a little bit of filming for them, filming one of their rehearsals, and they said, oh, here's a couple of tickets. I'm not even sure I had a tuxedo. So anyway, I just thought, oh, just a suit.
Yeah.
Which I guess would have been dark blue or grey or something. Anyway, it was smart. That very day, I remember turning up. Everyone else is in, all the other guys are in black, little black bow ties. I did notice one other person in a suit.
Right.
But this is the afternoon during the week. Mm. You know, people have come from work and stuff. Anyway, this is absolute truth. The next day in The Guardian, somebody was reviewing Glyndebourne and basically said, along the lines of, I don't know what the world is coming to. There were four people at Glyndebourne yesterday who weren't wearing black. Things are starting to change.
That's so good.
I thought, well, one of those was me.
You should have cut that out. Stuck that in your scrapbook.
I think I did. I think I have got that somewhere. I mean,
that is brilliant.
Kind of ridiculous. Although, you know, part of me is, I do like tradition, but I mean, actually, as long as you dress smart.
I think it is a thing, though, because upstairs I've got a coat that my mum made, especially to go to Glyndebourne.
Really?
It is incredible. It's gold. It's gold fabric. It's the most incredible thing. And I mean, it is really lovely.
Have you worn it to Glyndebourne?
No.
Have you worn it?
I've got a photo. No.
Would you wear it?
Yes. It's incredible.
Glyndebourne next summer.
No, it is quite stunning, but she actually made it, and she made the dress that goes with it. It's quite cool. It's quite 1970s. But I've got a lovely photo of my mum and dad, and dad did dress up, definitely. So, yeah, it was a good thing.
If you go to European opera houses, and I did some screenings of our composer films in Budapest, which was nice, but they took me to the opera house there. It's just the same. In fact, in Barcelona, in Paris, these kind of opera houses, it is as much about being seen.
Yeah.
And who else is there, and how they're dressed, and who they're with, as it is about who's performing and what the performance is.
And that's amazing. Even still today, it is amazing, really.
So, I mean, she's chosen, you know, she chooses the Paris Opera House for a reason, because you immediately know the narrative that people are there not, you know, as much to look and be looked at.
Mm.
And the whole, you know...
It's funny that she's just got a plain black dress on then. I mean, I suppose that was...
It's not very fancy, is it?
I don't think so. Not in my eyes, no. It's actually quite amazing as a painting, as we're all back to looking at the paintings, how dark that whole section is.
Mm.
But then, like, sometimes you say, so often, well, imagine if it was red or blue. It would not look right. Because the other ladies there down the bottom are all wearing, there's a lady there in black.
Mm.
The potential wife, mistress of the man looking, she looks similar.
Mm.
So, yeah. But it is funny that it is black that she's wearing.
I must admit, without any evidence whatsoever, I've always assumed that there's an element of Mary Cassatt herself in that woman.
Mm.
And that she's travelled to Paris and you take one really decent... It's like...
Okay, yeah.
It's like, you know, you have one decent black suit, don't you?
Mm.
Well, you don't. You might not, but... Well, you might.
I don't know.
You could not.
But I mean... Maybe, but you're right. It's travelling light.
It's kind of utilitarian.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the art world, there are plenty of people who simply will wear black to everything.
Yeah, okay.
And it makes, you know, it does various things, but it means you can wear it multiple times. It means people aren't focused on what you're wearing quite the same way and whatever.
So if I want to blend in, Phil, in the art world.
Well, you'll probably blend in better in a black dress. Than, you know, something
like that gold coat in the cover thing.
Than the gold
it's
coat.
Quite spectacular.
With the wings and the feather headdress.
But no, I'll save that one.
I mean, I'd also thought to myself that, you know, they're clearly at least the second row. So they've gone up a bit, but actually they're still in boxes, so that still puts them in a certain class.
Yeah.
Again, it was interesting going to another venue in Barcelona where you had all these boxes, but then the main, what we now call the stalls, were just benches.
Oh, okay.
And it was very rowdy down there. This was actually kind of music hall. That was very rowdy, and the boxes were all a little bit more kind of individual party groups. And
you'd want to be in the rowdy bit, wouldn't you?
I mean, I think...
Although that sounds uncomfortable.
It was funny because it was like the main dish down there was roast chicken, and it just felt like you'd gone back 300, 400 years. These benches of roast chicken and people throwing bones around.
So good.
It was midnight in Barcelona. It was I should have done it more than once. I only did it the once. Oh, anyway.
Brilliant. We
back to Mary Cassatt.
Yes, so, come on. We've got 18, right off.
But 1878 is a really interesting time because, of course, these painters at this point are... in the early days of being part of a group called the Impressionists.
Mm.
1874, you've got the first Impressionist show, which, you know, as to put it mildly, evoked mixed opinions.
Mm.
And some of those artists are not really even very comfortable about that term at all. And here's this American woman, and I always think it's interesting that these French artists... of different characteristics, different characters, but they accepted her.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that she's American and despite the fact she's a woman, although there's also, you know, Bert Morisot, and, you know, she's not the only woman impressionist.
No.
But she is experimenting herself with this way of painting. And if you actually look, what I find really incredible is that it, in some ways, it's very sketchy.
Mm. Yeah.
But, I mean, look at the guy who's got the binoculars. Just, I mean, it's remarkable. There's no way on this planet I could do that. With relatively little detail, that guy is leaning on the balcony. His other arm is probably holding onto his partner's chair.
Yeah.
And you can tell from that little smudge of black that he's got binoculars. Your brain's putting it all together.
No, it is incredible.
And even the woman next to him,
yeah,
it's just, you know. But actually, there's just enough of an indent to see a nose. There's just enough of a bit of white make it look like a frilly white dress.
Yeah, and like you say, that he's got the binoculars. But then there's a man behind as well. Is that a man behind?
Yeah. So then in the next group,
yeah,
looks to me like at least two women, maybe three, and a guy standing up.
It is funny.
Brilliantly done.
Do you remember last time when we were doing Girl in a Boat? We were seeing all sorts of things.
Yeah, we'll be careful not to see any oversized individuals.
But she was really, really good friends with Degas.
Yeah.
And Morisot was really, really good friends, wasn't she, with Manet?
Yeah. Well, she married Manet's brother.
Yeah. So that was nice that they both had... Well, yeah. I don't know if it was nice or not.
Oh, no, Cassatt and...
Yeah. It was nice that they were sort of... That they had someone who was sort of a mentor as such. Well... She was friends with him.
Girl in a Blue Armchair, which is a great...
Yes.
One of the most famous Cassatt paintings.
Yes.
It is clear well, according to a curator at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, it is clear that Degas either altered it himself or encouraged her to alter.
I did read that. And I did think it was quite funny because when we were doing Morisseau, Manet did get a little bit involved with her paintings. And then now we're saying about Cassatt and Degas. So did either one of those two women have a little go at some of the men's paintings? Because it's a bit funny, isn't it? That
I don't know. I mean, they're both strong women. I wouldn't be at all surprised.
It'd be funny if they actually found that. It would be quite good.
I mean, she remained in Paris. She remained unmarried. She dedicated her life to art.
Yeah. She painted lots and lots and lots of women with children.
She's very prolific, but actually it is possible to misunderstand her and think she's a bit saccharine and it's all, mothers and babies, mothers and children.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a lot more to her than that.
Well, she didn't have children, so it might have been that she, we don't know, she might have wanted some.
Yeah. Well.
Although her mum had, her parents had, I believe, seven.
Okay.
Two of which died quite young. So maybe she was surrounded in her childhood.
I guess. I don't know about her parents. Do you know, were they wealthy?
I think they weren't. They weren't. They were sort of middle class.
Okay.
I believe.
Because I know that her brother becomes arguably the wealthiest man in the United States.
Really?
If certainly one of.
Wow.
Because he ends up being in charge of the Pennsylvania Railroad.
Ah.
And these things always help. So, I mean, she was always going to be able to afford the fare across the Atlantic.
Yes.
That's another interesting. These liners crossing the Atlantic, they were relatively recent.
Yeah.
And that made a big difference too. The Impressionist paintings that Durand Ruel took to America on a liner. You know, if he couldn't have travelled comfortably, he may never have gone.
No. No.
Anyway, and she was able to go the other way and absolutely fell in love with Paris.
Yeah.
In fact, not so long ago, we went to film, I didn't, but my colleague went to film a couple of the chateaux that she lived in outside of Paris, and they're glorious. I mean, why wouldn't you fall in love and decide to stay?
Definitely.
But post-American Civil War, when America, United States was rebuilding, and was just expanding economically anyway. If you were in the railroads, things like that, steel and shipping, and you made a fortune. And it's those very people that then bought paintings by the crate load. So again, her brother would have entree to these people.
Right, I see. Okay.
So there's some of those names that we know of now: Barnes and Carnegie, and so many others. Havemeyers, very wealthy individuals, building big houses and wanting art on their walls.
Yeah.
And so these kind of painters, the Impressionists, who couldn't find a market in Europe, found it in the United States. I don't actually know to what extent Cassatt, Ali, who's directing the film, would be interesting to find out. I don't know to what extent her paintings became popular in the United States.
I think it took a while.
Did it?
So I believe. I don't think she was well received to start with. So.
Do you think that's her painting, or because she's American, or because she's a woman, or?
I don't know. I think it took a while to get there, but then, like you say, I have no idea. Because I really like her work, but in the beginning it was a bit more detailed, and now, of course, no, not so detailed. But I think they're lovely. It's funny how she focuses always on the audience in her paintings.
It isn't. I mean, there's no sense of the stage at all.
No.
Except what we imagine.
She's done another couple, isn't she? There was Woman in a Pearl Necklace, 1879, which I think was her sister, once again, in the audience.
That was definitely her sister,
So, yeah. Whereas Degas, he always focused on the stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And the performers. It's funny how they all pick their little part.
I wonder if this is a bit of a nod. No, actually, it wouldn't have been Girl with the Pearl Earring. Wasn't really known at this point.
Oh, okay.
But that little pup, I haven't really noticed
well,
it.
Well, I hadn't said it, both of us.
That pearl's actually quite... it's really quite distinctive, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
What I really like, actually, is the front of the balcony.
Yeah.
And there's probably a technical term for it, which I'd love one of our viewers to tell me what that is. But again, it's so sketchy, but you totally get it. You understand exactly how that must have looked. There's just enough swirls to get... I mean, it's brilliantly done.
It is. And there's not a lot of detail at all on the sort of wall bit. No. Well, not wall bit, but the back of the balcony. And then the partition behind her.
She must have sketched it. Because actually, that lower... You look at that lower box, you can see the partition between the two couples and the wooden beam going up. That looks like a smaller box. Which is slightly odd because that's lower down, which I would have thought would be...
Smaller box cost, yeah.
Would be bigger.
She's the nice big ones at the top. The ones with the bed. I love that story. That's good.
I went to the theatre in Brighton and we got the box near on the lower level near the stage.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Okay.
Because in this particular show, it was... what was that show? It was where they did Shakespeare.
When they're a little bit... Not when they've had too much drink.
No.
Okay, because I wasn't going to say that.
That would be funny. Now, this is one where they kind of do rapid Shakespeare.
Oh, okay, fine.
So they'll do Macbeth in 3 minutes, and they go through all the plays.
That sounds brilliant.
But, of course, there's a bit of audience participation.
Oh, no.
What a nightmare when they turn to us.
You're right there.
I'm not sure I want to go in a box again.
No.
If there's any...
No. Not if there's that kind of pressure. No, I'd hate that.
Like if there's a comedian or something like that.
Yeah, no.
But again, I'm sure that's partly in Cassatt's mind that these people are perfectly aware that not only are they watching a show, but they are also part of a separate show, which is them.
That's great. Imagine all the gossip that was going on. And can you imagine? It just wouldn't stop. Who's with who?
It must have been amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Let's go to Parisville.
I have been to the Opera House. It is quite an extraordinary building.
Does it have a massive social area at the beginning?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, outside, on all levels, you go out, and there might be two or three intervals in the show sometimes, or you've got it before and the after, and there are all these different champagne bars and different areas, and it's very much about that, and very much about getting dressed up.
Yes.
So even now in the cinema, when they show live opera, some of the cleverer art house cinemas really encourage people to get dressed up.
Mm. Well, you don't get many occasions, do you?
Well, no, that's
not
right.
Really. And so if I was going to the opera, I would definitely dress up. Yeah. So probably a bit more than I am today. No one knows what I'm wearing today, but I've been cooking. I just take the apron off. Mince pies, getting ready for Christmas. But yeah, no, I would definitely dress up. And I think it's sweet, because I remember my mum and dad going, and they did not go to the opera very much. And I remember mum making that outfit. And then I've got some really sweet photos of them. And they were sitting with a picnic. I think they only went the once to Glyndebourne. So they really made the most of it.
Oh, well, we should go in their honour then next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just fantastic out there.
But
you know, the Royal Opera House is also...
I've been there once.
Staggering.
Yeah. I have been there once. We're lucky enough to go there once. So, yeah. Okay.
And then Mary Cassatt, a really, really interesting impressionist artist. As I said, my colleague Ali is making a film about her as we speak, and obviously I'm involved in it, but I'm really looking forward to working on that and seeing how that turns out.
So where's she making the most of it then? Does she actually go to Paris to make it?
So there's been one short shoot around Paris.
Yeah.
And then next year there'll be a shoot in Paris, and then definitely a shoot in the United States.
Oh, brilliant. So you'll be like one of those paintings again with the... When we did the Manet, the railway, And then you said, oh no, I've been by that door. So Ali will be able to say,
actually,
she's sitting in a box and stuff, that she might actually find the real one.
Well, she is actually, it's funny you should say that, she is actually trying to find, to get access to a, to an opera house. And obviously the obvious one would be Paris, but sometimes logistically or financially, it just becomes a hurdle that's too high to, to climb over.
That's funny. I just thought you'd easily be able to just get in there.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure they've tried yet.
Okay.
I mean, I interviewed Rene Fleming at the Paris Opera House for my Mozart film.
Mm.
And they were really helpful. They were great. But that was, you know, behind the scenes and in her dressing room. And it's,
oh, yeah, okay.
It's no big deal.
No.
I mean, in Brighton right now, slightly different, but they're renovating the...
Corn Exchange?
No.
Oh, sorry.
We had this conversation the other day on Middle Street.
Oh, Hippodrome.
The Hippodrome.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
I mean, and they do seem to be spending a lot of money taking it back to its original ornate Victorian origins, which... And that has balconies, and it used to have a revolving roof area and dungeon, you know, big, all sorts of, you know.
Oh, I wish my dad was here so badly.
Yeah.
Because he saw Duke Ellington there, Shirley Bassey and stuff like that. I mean, he would go mad.
Rolling Stones played there.
So good.
It's a fantastic
picture. It's going to be so good when it opens.
So obviously my office is now the small car park behind the Hippodrome.
Yeah.
I've seen a photograph where in that space, some guy's leading an elephant into the back of the Hippodrome, because we used to have an elephant. And apparently there's a basement room which is big enough for the elephant, where they used to keep the elephant. I mean...
Well, I keep the elephant for just...
Well, they bring it out on stage and do tricks with a ball.
Oh, no.
I mean, can you imagine if they...
Yes.
I mean, the trouble isn't here. I've got to say, it's slightly prejudicial. If we were in Madrid or Barcelona or somewhere like that, actually the midnight show in one of those places with a music hall sense to it would be great.
Mm.
I've got to say, here, you'd just be a bit concerned that people would be too drunk. And it just, they wouldn't, and it wouldn't, it would take the edge off it somehow. Don't you think? Don't you think British people go from green to red?
Really? Yes, I completely agree. Yeah,
100%. I've been out in Madrid where people having a little beer, yeah, a little tapper, go for hours.
Mm.
And
yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Don't kind of go and wee in someone's garden. Throw up over somebody's.
No, I'm worried now because I think it's Christmas party next week, so I'm going to have to really be. I'm going to have to really hold it together.
Well, let's just say we have to keep our car park gates firmly shut for the next 3 weeks.
In case I get drunk and bring an elephant in.
Exactly. Somewhere along there may have been a brief moment when we talked about the painting. All I can really say is, have a close look at this painting.
Mm.
She may not be an impressionist that you've heard of, but she is part of the impressionist group. Really interesting woman, really interesting story. Lots of fine paintings, and we hope you've enjoyed this week's Painting of the Week.
Lovely.
Thank you for listening to the Painting of the Week podcast. For more information, please visit our website at seventh-art.com or contact us by emailing info@seventh-art.com. See you next time.